Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com. Please visit us there or at one of our many syndicated affiliates, including iHeartRadio.com, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio, and the list goes on and on and on and on for you all. It's so great to be here talking spiritual, talking paranormal. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host here in Los Angeles. And I've been here at Live Paranormal. I brought all my shows over here at the beginning of this year and honored to be here with you all. Haunted Playground airs every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time right here at Live Paranormal. And I also do Raising the Vibration on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock Pacific time right here on Live Paranormal. And I do three video shows for them on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday nights. Tonight I'll be doing the companion to this show, Haunted Playground After Dark, and all of those are at 9 o'clock Pacific time right here on Live Paranormal's video channel, which is at facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal. Every week on this show, I gather folks that I believe to be the brightest and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in the paranormal community. Many of them are artists. Of course, my background is as a performing and creative artist. Sometimes they're psychics. Sometimes they're just regular folk. Paranormal has touched. My guest today is a brilliant creative entity, producer, director, creative artist, content creator. I had the pleasure of working with him on two paranormal projects this summer. And I'm excited to have him here on the show to talk about how the paranormal has entered and changed his life. Please welcome to the show the wonderful Michael Mazzola. How are you, my friend? It's so wonderful to have you here on the show, and so great to hear your voice.
I'm great, Sheena. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm totally thrilled to have you here. I guess we're going to kind of talk around the projects that I worked on with you because you know what we can say more than I do. But tell us first, tell my listeners a little bit about you as a creative person. How did the world of the arts enter your life, and then how did the world of the paranormal enter your life?
Well, I always knew I wanted to be in film and be an artist. And all I wanted to do was make movies and tell stories. I did not expect to be working in this field at all, in paranormal. In fact, I was a debunker of the paranormal. I hated all of this stuff. And I was a hardcore atheist, and I was really obnoxious. Like, I thought I was smarter than everybody, and I loved to debate this with people. So, you know, I loved, you know, getting into arguments and debunking God or debunking psychics or debunking aliens or conspiracies. And, you know, I had friends who were also skeptics, right? And they would say, you know, I wish I could believe, but I just don't see the evidence. And I would say, I don't want to believe. I'm glad it's not true. You know, like, I was so hostile to this whole field. And then eventually I started looking at, arguments against my position, not because I suspected I might be wrong, but just because I wanted to be ready for any debate. And the moment I examined those arguments, my position completely collapsed. And I realized that you know, the skeptics always love to say, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Well, the extraordinary evidence was there. There was an embarrassment of riches. It was overwhelming. And I realized, oh, the skeptics aren't skeptics. They're cynics. They're cynical debunkers and jerks. And I had become one of them. And so then I had to ask myself, why? Why is it that I didn't just not believe, but I was hostile towards it? And the answer that popped into my head was that, you know, if I'm just living in a cold, impersonal, random physical universe, then, you know, I'm just a victim of circumstance. I'm not responsible for my life. I'm not responsible for my thoughts. I'm not responsible for my own happiness. But, you know, if all of this phenomenon is real and if our thoughts really do create reality, that I have to take responsibility for that, right? If there really are ETs visiting us and there's a cover-up, well, I can't just ignore that. I have to do something about that. So that's when I started trying to figure out, okay, what can I do about this and how can I take the most amount of responsibility for this information that I now have? And since the only thing I know how to do is make movies, that's what I started doing.
That's wonderful. So let me ask you something. When you were the hardcore debunker, right? When you were the skeptic, mm-hmm. Michael, why do you think that was such a passion? Like, it seems like it was like an obsessive passion almost. Why did you so much want it not to be true?
Well, you know, the thing about, you know, not having to take responsibility, I think, is very persuasive. It's a big part of it that we don't normally really talk about. We assume that people who disagree with us, they're just not, you know, they haven't seen enough data. They need to see a little bit more evidence, and then they'll be persuaded. But really, I think we underestimate how scary this reality can be. You know, if the thoughts that are going through my head are going to come back to me in a few days as manifested reality, well, I better start taking responsibility for what I'm doing instead of just running on autopilot. So I think we're asking a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
you know, to embrace this stuff. But, you know, I had been raised Catholic, and it had really traumatized me. And mm-hmm. what I liked about Catholicism was that it gave me certainty. You know, I had all the answers. And then what I liked about atheism and material reductionism is that it gave me certainty and I had all the answers, right?
And then
you start getting into this phenomenon, you know, there are a few things we can point to, like, you know, that there are non-human intelligences that are communicating with humans, you know, there's some kind of deep interconnection between you and me and everybody and everything around us. You know, that we could be certain
sure.
about. But for
collective
the most
unconscious.
Part,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But for the most part, it's still really kind of uncertain. And everybody's got their theory and they're dying to tell you their theory. But, you know, a lot of it is just really kind of, you gotta get comfortable with just saying, I don't know. And that was really scary for me also.
Well, and it's a lot, right? And it's like going down the rabbit hole, because the more you learn about, the more there is. And it's interesting because I use this example all the time. So my girlfriend was raised very Christian and sort of found her way to a more open spirituality. Now, she raised her kids to all be very open spiritually. So her daughter, who's now 18, who I love like mine, nobody ever told her, she doesn't have that Christian imprinting of that's wrong, that's evil, that's terrible. So as she is learning more things now about off-worlders, about interdimensionals, about reincarnation, about witchcraft, and all the things that her hungry little light worker mind wants to learn, she's all very accepting of it. But I find with my girlfriend, because it's all new to her, you know, it's a lot of it seems like to grow past that Christian expectation of that's bad, that's not right, that's not okay. And I, too, my mother was a psychic medium. She was very open, in the closet about being a psychic medium until I was in college, but very, very open spiritually, and raised me to be very open and find my own way. So I, too, understand it's a lot, but the amount of allotness doesn't overwhelm me. But I think that folks that come from any kind of organized religion, they're having to sort of work past that in order to accept all the different stuff. And there's all these ideas of, well, can there be UFOs and fairies, and there's angels, but there's also interdimensionals, there's earth spirits, but there's also spirits of dead people. There's an active haunting and a residual haunting, and there's, you know, ritual magic and earth magic and garden magic, and it seems all very overwhelming, right? If you grew up being a seeker, it's like, bring me more, bring me more, bring me more, bring me more. But I think for folks who grow up like you did, Catholic, you kind of have to work beyond that. And I think, you know, my father was a lapsed Catholic, and he, too, had it was very atheist. And I used to always say he liked robots more than people. He was a design engineer, so everything was about mechanics to him. And he had a very hard time with the spirituality that my mom and I brought into the house, because I think when religion has kind of scarred you, right, then you think, well, it'll all be a bunch of crap, and that's why it scarred me. It's hard for folks to realize, well, maybe this particular thing just wasn't right for me, but there are all these things over here that are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. I think that Catholics have a special Catholicism has a special place in my heart because, you know, Italian family and being grown up in it. But there is this sort of magical and psychic element to the Catholic worldview that Catholics are kind of in denial about. And you look at the saints. You know, they were all exhibiting, you know, the sort of spiritual abilities that manifest as you attain higher and higher states of consciousness, right? So psychic abilities, telepathy, levitation, healing. And it's just funny how, you know, it's like it's so blatant and it's right there, but it's got the stigma attached to it. And, you know, and All these different phenomena that you just rattled off, it is overwhelming. But you got to keep in mind that's just, you know, this is just labels that we've put on stuff, right?
Right.
And it's just our way of trying to categorize and catalog all this stuff, and it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be overwhelming, and it may not even be all these different things. It may all just be one thing, you know, but we're looking at different pieces of the quilt, right, and labeling it these different things.
Absolutely.
It's really just a big mystery.
So, but you know what? I grew up with a mother who believed that Christ and Buddha were the same person. Not that they three-dimensionally were the same person, but my mom believed that Christ, like not Jesus, because Jesus was a person, that Christ was a consciousness, and that throughout time, wherever that Christ consciousness needed to be to benefit the evolution of all things on the earth, that's where it was put, and that through different periods of time, different human beings took on the Christ consciousness. And when you think about that, that's actually kind of beautiful that there's just sort of this yummy, light-filled thing that pops in when we need it and then goes to a different person later when it's needed. And I think it's the same thing, and now I'm going to get all heavy, but I think it's the same thing with darkness. If you look at the history of man, right, you see these specific places where there is just heinous darkness. And then it goes away, and however many years later, it crops up somewhere else. You know, Salem, the Inquisition, the Third Reich. I mean, it's all these different places, right, where there's just real awful stuff. And then just when it's done, somewhere later it – so maybe if there is a Christ consciousness, there is like an Antichrist consciousness. And maybe the Antichrist isn't really like a person that's going to be born somewhere with 666 in the scalp, but actually a consciousness that sort of, you know, because like you were talking about how everything's falling under the same sort of umbrella and us putting labels on everything as humans, because we love to label things and put them in boxes. For me, there are really only two labels, and that is there is darkness and there is light. And that is the balance of the universe. And when I picture it in my head, it looks like the yin-yang symbol. And where the light is, there's no darkness. And where the darkness is, there's no light. And some places are light heavy with a little bit of darkness, and some places are dark heavy with a little bit of light, and most places are somewhere in between. I think that is the same with living things as well, that we all have a little bit of each in us, and it just depends on where our balance is. So I, to me, if you break down all the things that you think about, are they things of the light? Well, then they kind of all fall under the same umbrella, and if you need help, and you're praying to Jesus or Buddha or Allah or Krishna or Saint Michael or, Seamus the Leprechaun, if you tap into that light source and it comes back to you and benefits you, does it really matter where it comes from? And I think saints are a brilliant example, Michael, because here are people of all different walks of life, right, many of whom were not believers, until for whatever reason they got this download from the light. And the download told them, this is now what you do, and now you step into service. As we all get that download, right? You got it for art. I got it for art, and then halfway through my life I got it again for spirituality. So, you know, we're just all sort of here in some form of service and duty, whether it's active duty or reserve duty. We're not all being called in to do our thing all the time. But, that's kind of how I feel about the universality of it all, and I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, you really just blew my mind with the whole idea of the Antichrist consciousness. I never thought about that. I totally agree with you about the Christ consciousness, and I believe that I too believe that was Buddha, and that was Jesus, and that was Krishna.
Krishna.
You know, it's been a while since we've had somebody. I wonder if... You know, maybe it's Oprah. I don't know who we have today, if we have someone.
I'm pretty sure Oprah thinks it's Oprah. What about Gandhi? Or I have to tell you, so this is kind of a strange story, but I'll tell you, I grew up, literally came out of the womb obsessed with Abraham Lincoln. I mean, as a toddler, I was begging my mother to show me where he died and to take me to Gettysburg. And other kids wanted to go to Legoland, and I wanted to go to see the Lincoln Memorial. And, I mean, just a freak. And it's funny because my best friend and her son run the Historical Society in the town I grew up in Huntington Beach, California. And they are Civil War reenactors, and they, like, tease me about my obsession with Lincoln. So when I saw the Lincoln movie, the Daniel Day-Lewis Lincoln movie, I'd never really thought about this before, but if you think about Lincoln, right, I mean, his whole push was to get that Emancipation Proclamation signed. And shortly after, when it went through, he was gone. And you see people in life like that, right, that they push for this agenda, Martin Luther King, Harvey Milk. I mean, could all these people have little bits of the Christ consciousness in them, Malcolm X? Where they're pushing and pushing and pushing for this thing for humanity, Joan of Arc. And once it comes, then they're martyred and poof, they're gone. I mean, if you look at the history of martyrs, right? I mean, it's very similar. And maybe that's a little bit of the Christ consciousness goes where it's needed. Maybe it's not always a Jesus or a Buddha. Maybe sometimes it's just to push something through, right? Because rights for people, that is part of the light, right? For everyone to be equal and enjoy life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, that is the light. So even though my beloved Lincoln, right, I'd never thought about him in that way till I saw that film. And then I thought, it's very interesting how people come and they're just a little bit touched. And, you know, Lincoln, very psychic, right? He saw all kinds of ghosts in the White House, saw his own death.
True.
It's, you know, and I think a lot of saints, right, a lot of the saints, the same sort of experiences. When I first founded my raisingthevibration.org spiritual movement, my peace, love, kindness, unity movement, I started studying all different religions I didn't know a lot about. And believe it or not, I'm an Irish girl who did not grow up Catholic. I had a Protestant parent and a Catholic parent, and the Catholic parent was lapsed. So I didn't know a lot about saints. And a friend of mine was very involved in the Catholic Church, and he helped me with some stuff and got me some holy cards, which I now collect, prayer cards and holy cards. And I started learning, and man, for a church that doesn't believe in psychics, a lot of those saints were psychics. Like, they literally had visions and to angels and spoke to God. And, you know, I felt like it was old home week at the psychic convention reading about a lot of those folks.
It really is amazing. And it's like, you know, it's like Catholics have this total blind spot. You know, these people didn't start off as saints. And that's sort of how, at least the couples I know, they kind of think of them. You put them in the same category as Christ or God or Mary or whatever. And, you know, but if you read their biographies, these were all totally average people who gradually, over time, developed their consciousness and learned to be more loving, became these super high-frequency beings, and then these abilities developed, you know? And they're supposed to, I think they're supposed to be an example to the rest of us of what we're supposed to do. You know, it's analogous to the siddhis in the, you know, S-I-D-D-H-I-S in the Vedic tradition. You look at these ancient yoga texts, you know, they talk about, you know, what are the abilities that, you know, the siddhis that will manifest after years of, you know, spiritual purification and meditation. Well, it's levitation, telepathy, teleportation, dematerialization, bilocation. And come to think of it, Sheena, what are UFOs doing? Well, they're levitating, they're teleporting, they're dematerializing, they're bilocating, and they're communicating telepathically with people. And that's, and the school of thought that I come from in ufology, and which we talk about in the movies that I've made, is that, you know, that's not a coincidence. You know, it's because we are dealing with civilizations that have millions or more years of spiritual development on us. They've all attained these super higher states of consciousness, and, you know, and they've developed these cities, these abilities, and those abilities are now manifesting technologically, right? So I could go on. I didn't mean to change the subject like that and bring up aliens.
No, please. No, the subject goes wherever it goes. No, and I completely agree. I completely agree with that. And that consciousness, I mean, I think as we become, I mean, for a long time I've believed that really, science and spirituality are two sides of the same coin. We're just not evolved enough to see it yet. We're getting there. And I think that's one example of things we're not evolved enough yet as humans to understand. One of those things, I think, is the idea that really everyone's religion, everyone's consciousness, if you walk in the light, is pretty much the same. We're all believing pretty much the same thing. And I remember when I first, when I was in my early 20s, I was already very metaphysical and a firm reincarnationist. I did a TV show, and one of the guys in my cast was half Cherokee and half Irish, and he had done the Druidic trail and the Shamanic trail back to back and was talking to me about the similarities. And my mother had always been fascinated with Native American culture, and I was getting very into my Irish heritage at the time. And so I learned a lot from him about the pre-Christian Celtic religion, of which I still love many things about it. And I was thinking about, you know, all the polytheistic religions, right? All these people all over the world, Michael, none of them knew they existed. Like, people didn't even know North America existed. Yet almost every culture's polytheistic religion was exactly the same. The names were different. Sometimes the stories were different. But everybody had a god of the rain and a god of the wind and a god of the sea. And, I mean, it all pretty much panned out the same. And everybody had leprechaun and a creature like a fairy and a creature like an elf and a creature like a troll, even though nobody knew these other cultures existed. I mean, even when you think about it, most cultures had a Loch Ness Monster kind of culture if they were near water, a Bigfoot sort of creature, something like the Jersey Devil, something like the Chupacabra. And we're talking about cultures that, you know, like didn't even know there was more to the world than where they were. And it really started blowing my mind about this idea of the universality of spirituality. And then I would think about, well, perhaps the Christ consciousness, perhaps Christ was sort of like, it's like the God of the living things. You know what I mean? Somebody's in charge of the wind and the rain, and that consciousness is in charge of the enlightenment of living things. And, you know, you say that in a room of Christian people and you're probably going to lose your head. But, you know, why not? Doesn't it all sort of fit together? So I think the answer is Jesus, yes. Buddha, yes. Krishna, yes. You know, pagan religions, yes. It's all right, and it's all supposed to be here. And all of it together just fast-tracks our ascension, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, if you read the actual, you know, writings of the, some of the saints or their biographies, you know, these were people who deeply internalized and could perceive the interconnection of all things. And would write about, you know, seeing Christ in the face of every other person, you know, that they would encounter. There was this really profound understanding of this deep interconnection between all things and all people that is very strongly correlated to sainthood and these higher states of consciousness. And it's just, it's sad that that gets so lost in translation. I mean, it's there, you know. I mean, any Catholic school or church will have these books on the shelf. But it just, it isn't, you know, for anyone willing to, in the way that the tradition is sort of passed on, it's kind of just sort, it's lost all of that mystical element, you know, unless you really dig for it. And I don't understand why that is. I think that people would be way more engaged with it if that mystical element was more emphasized, because, you know, people are finding that elsewhere, right? They're leaving the churches and these major religious traditions, and they're looking to Eckhart Tolle, which is wonderful, you know, and sort of new age things, looking for that. But they shouldn't have to do that, because it's baked into the tradition, you know, if we would just teach it properly.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And teach it as a piece of the larger puzzle, which is the everything. I mean, I think that is so important. And then it isn't so important when you encounter a being that is not of this earth. It doesn't matter so much what they are, as just that you're having the communication with them. I know in the paranormal world, and I love the paranormal world, and I'm very proud to be a part of the community, it's a lot about identifying everything. What is it? Is it this? Is it that? Is it that? I'm thinking, well, I don't care what it is. The fascinating thing is it's speaking to me. And people ask me all the time as a psychic medium, you know, how much are you getting live people, and how much are you getting angels, and how much are you getting I don't sit and write down the percentages. It's just if there is a sentient energy that wants to have a communication with me and it is of the light, then I am more than happy to do that. And it doesn't matter to me if it's Uncle Joe or somebody's dead hamster, or, you know, Archangel Gabriel, or, you know, Seamus the Leprechaun, or it doesn't matter to me. It's just an energy that wants to share and communicate. And that's the most important thing, that we share, you know. And I think sometimes when we're in a place paranormal investigating and we're screaming at a spirit, who are you and how old are you and how did you die? And okay, But what about, why don't we just maybe stop, turn our recorders on, stop talking, and let's maybe see what the spirit wants to say to us. Because I think sometimes the spirit world is very frustrated by the fact that we as living people do a lot of talking and not a lot of listening. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, if you're an alien hunter, everything that goes bump in the night is an alien. And if you're a ghost
right.
hunter,
exactly.
everything is a ghost. If you're an exorcist, everything is a demon. And, you
right.
know, I happen to believe in all of these phenomena.
Me too,
and,
yeah.
And they we need to create a cosmology where they all sort of coexist. I think there's just been so much confusion and just sort of conflation between these different phenomena. It's really difficult to just sort of sit there with something that's happening, you know, with the phenomena itself without trying to interpret it through one of these frameworks that are so popular, and they're useful frameworks, and I think there's a lot of truth in all of them for the most part. But you know, ultimately, we've got to stop theorizing about all this stuff, and we have to get more people to participate in the experience, and that's what we were trying to do with the film we put out last year, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, which is about you know, humans initiating contact with ET beings. And the film is
right.
2 hours long, and we try to give you like a philosophical and scientific and sort of spiritual framework to understand this contact experience. But if you don't then participate in the experience, all of this information is useless. You know, you could theorize all you want, memorize it, whatever. And there are people who have, you know. And I love our fans, and I love, you know, just totally love and appreciate them. But, you know, but if you don't actually go out and try to make contact and participate in the experience, you've missed the point, you know.
And do you find that most people do miss the point? I mean, do most people just want to learn about it, but they don't really want to actively participate in becoming part of the quest for communication?
Yeah, you know, I don't know sort of the demographics, right? I don't know if it's majority or minority or whatever. I just see people who are on such different wavelengths in this community. You know, you've got still so much of the UFO community that's stuck in the, you know, you know, if there isn't a physical piece of evidence or a photograph that it didn't happen, you know, it's like we're, you know, building a case to litigate in court, you know. And then you've got the community that's all about the subjective experience and trying to get others to participate in that. And, you know, people are all over the spectrum. And it's a pretty intense community, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
With a lot of diversity, and we spend more time fighting each other than we do fighting for disclosure. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I think of all of the different sects of the paranormal world, I think the UFO folks are probably the most intense sect of all. The UFO folks, they're not playing, and I think it's because of the intelligence of the energies that they are trying to communicate with and are communicating with. I think that spirits, just spirits, like spirits of living people who have died, ghosts, are much more passive for the most part. Every once in a while, you get one that's got a lot of darkness that's, you know, just, you know, really a shit stirrer. But for the most part, spirits are very passive. They just want to be heard. They want to find their loved ones. They want to know what's going on. They want to pass the messages on. You know, here's where I left the ring in my house coat jacket. And, you know, please tell daddy I love him. And mostly it's they're very happy to be home because home feels much better than it feels on the earth. So they're just kind of elated and happy and for the most part, pretty chill. Now, the ones that their energy stays in locations and they're very dark, that's the exception, but for the most part. But I think when you're dealing with, I mean, obviously demonic stuff is horrible, but I don't think demonic contact is as anywhere near as common or as available as it is for folks to contact off-worlders. There's a lot. I went to an off-world channeling session once. And I got to tell you, this thing, to this day, I don't know if it was an off-world or if it was an angel. It was supposed to be off-worlders only, but this thing landed on the roof of this house, and it was enormous. And it was not a craft. It was a being. And its energy was so strong and so intense. And like I said, at the time, I felt it was angelic. But now the more I'm learning that oftentimes those two communities are mistaken for each other. And also maybe and some people believe even they're the same, that angels
it's
are
very,
kind of off-worlder.
Common.
This
yeah,
thing
no, it,
was
pissed.
It was pissed. It was kind of like, don't make us come back there, sort of its attitude. And it was pissed about hate and rage and anger and negativity and bigotry and all the things that human beings are doing to each other. And it was very angry at what we're doing to the planet. That was its big, like,
yeah.
We don't want to have to come back. And I thought, oh, God, they're going to come back and smote us all Old Testament style. And we don't want to have to come back there. But the way that human beings are ruining what they have here, ruining the earth, ruining each other, spending all their time hating and anger and all these wasted emotions. And it was not happy. And then just like that, it was off the roof and it was gone. And I can tell you, walking to my car that night in the Hollywood Hills, horrible haunted house. But that night, I was like, is that thing going to swoop down and pick me up? Because it was so intense and so direct and so, look, we're not messing with you guys. You got to fix this or we will come and fix this. And ever since then, I tell that story. And I'm like, fix it. Everybody fix it. Let's fix it. Because we don't want them to come back and fix it for us. But, yeah, there's such an intensity there, right? I mean, have you, Michael, have you had contact with one like that?
No, certainly not like that. But I've interviewed a tremendous amount of people who have relayed similar things, less frightening, but the same kind of communication and same kind of message. You know, what we do here has a ripple effect throughout the cosmos. You know, first of all, we're setting off atomic weapons, which is what started all this. That has it doesn't just destroy stuff here on Earth, but it is screwing stuff up in other dimensions. And these are interdimensional. They're not necessarily beings from another dimension, but they are beings that are so advanced that they can operate interdimensionally. And they certainly travel transdimensionally. And so we are having a ripple effect throughout the cosmos. But also, if you're talking about beings that are, you know, spiritually advanced to the point of, you know, what we would consider that sort of sainthood, right? That level of consciousness,
right.
And then add millions of years to that, you know, they're going to be acutely sensitive to this idea that, you know, we're all connected, which of course we are. You know, and it's not just a metaphor. It's not just a pretty thought. It's literally true. We're just not. Most of us just aren't very good at sort of perceiving that interconnection. And what we do to another harms ourselves, but it really does. And so I think that's part of it too. And that's clear from the messages that they've been giving. You know, it's always, you know, please care for the planet, stop messing around with nuclear weapons, and raise your consciousness, learn to love one another. You know, it's pretty corny mm-hmm. stuff, but it's consistent.
Oh, yeah, and this thing was intense, and the intensity was a lot to digest. But I loved everything this being was saying, and I was with it 100%. I was like, yeah, you know what? We got to clean up our stuff, people. These guys are going to come back. Stand, especially since I believe that, you know, there are missing link ancestor, right? So they left us here to steward this planet, technically their offspring, and we haven't done so great. We're like, you know, we should be like in some kind of like universal juvenile hall for how we've treated this planet and how we treat each other. And I love
we're
that.
All under
I
some
mean,
kind
I'm,
of quarantine.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's the beginning of don't make us come back there.
Right.
You know?
So.
Have you had any paranormal experiences that have just been yours?
I've had a few. I had some kind of very dark, menacing entity. When I was a teenager, laying in bed, it sort of came over me like a blanket, held me down, and it was this raspy voice in my ear was telling me to get out, and it was the scariest thing I've ever experienced. I'll never forget it. I was awake in bed, and then suddenly I couldn't see it, but I could perceive it. And it was just this this dark, dark sort of presence. And it was only for a few moments, and it held me down. It said, get out, get out. And that was it.
Were you young? Young and living with your parents at the time?
Yep.
Okay. It's not out there. It's actually very common. When I grew up in that horrible haunted house as a kid, that happened to me a lot. Not the voice, or I think I would have made my parents move the first day, but the thing that holds you down and sometimes it would appear to me in my room as somebody that I knew, a classmate or once my cousin. And then I would say, well, wait a minute, that's not right. You don't really look like, and then the next thing you knew, it was just the black and it was on top of you and it was holding you down. And my mom in that house, it got a little rapey with her. I don't know, for lack of a better word, that's the one I got tonight. So that is, and I love when the therapists are like, oh, it's sleep paralysis. And I'm like, that's a really interesting kind of sleep paralysis. It's visitations. And that's something that if you've ever watched the documentaries about sleep paralysis and these visitations, that's something that really creeps me out. There are very few things, and I'm going to ask you yours next, that really sort of creep me out. And that is one. Mothman, for some reason, is one. I don't know why. And also, sort of off-worlders, because I had an off-world experience that was really kind of scary, and it made me a little unsettled about the whole thing. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, they love to just label stuff and pretend that that is an explanation for it, right? So they'll say, oh, that's
right.
Sleep paralysis. Or, oh, that's just
right.
The placebo effect, right? But it
right.
Doesn't explain anything, you know? You know, great, you've labeled it. That doesn't explain it. But they just label it
right.
And dismiss it.
Right.
Oh, it's sleep paralysis. Oh, it's placebo effect. Yeah, okay.
Right, exactly. It definitely does not explain why, from the beginning of time, there has been lore about these things that lay on top of you. And it almost feels like, for me, it almost felt like there was a board on top of me. Like if somebody had put a giant, you know, piece of board, like a giant, and just put it on top of you and sat on top of it. Like I couldn't move from anywhere. And
yeah.
And then you pray, or and it goes away. That's the interesting thing, right? Is the how you make it go away and how you stave it off. And my mom wound up somewhere in a metaphysical shop. I don't know how she found one in the 70s. And somebody told her to do white light invocations and to ask for protection from the white light and surround yourself with the white light. And if we both did it every night, that was how we staved off those visitations. But if one of us was in the hospital or I was spending the night somewhere and we weren't both in the house, then they would come back. It needed the energy of both of us to stave it off, which I think is also yeah. fascinating, you know, because that tells you you're dealing with a sentient presence that is literally needing that much energy to stop it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that sounds absolutely terrifying. I didn't experience anything on that level. You know, this thing telling me to get out, it happened a couple times.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Never felt comfortable in my house again after that.
I don't blame you.
And
yeah.
yeah, and I still don't have an explanation for it. My mom and sister used to see spirits around the house, which I didn't know at the time. I never saw anything. I just had, you know, the experience I just relayed to you. So.
Yeah, it's interesting that different people in a haunted house see and feel different things. The spirits show to specific human energies the thing I think they think will scare them the most or they will get the most attention from. And maybe because, were you the littlest one, the youngest in the house?
No, I was the oldest.
Oh, wow, interesting.
I was
yeah,
the big
for some
brother.
Reason they thought that particularly would scare you. That thing would scare
well,
you.
Well, it worked.
And
but why do they want
yeah.
to scare us?
Well, sometimes they just want you out of their house. You know, it's like you always laugh about that movie, The Others, right, where they thought the house was haunted and they were the haunting. Sometimes they just want you out of their house. I think when they say get out, that's pretty obvious. Sometimes I think negative, they just want to cause trouble. It feels good. I mean, have you ever known a really negative, narcissistic person, Michael, and they literally kind of got off on people's unhappiness? You know, they laughed.
I know a couple.
At, you know, if a kid fell down and hurt their head, they'd laugh. And, you know, I knew this very negative person once who was in my life for God only knows why. And their big thing was to watch those videos where like people fall and hurt themselves. It was like their amusement. As an empath, I watch that stuff and I feel like it's happening to me. But this person loved it. Like, oh, look, isn't this funny? I remember there was one where a bunch of high school kids were doing Peter Pan and the little girl playing Peter Pan was soaring up to the top doing I'm Flying, and something happened and the cord got cut and she fell down to the stage. And this person was just like, I've watched this 100 times. And all I was thinking of was, oh, my God, is this little girl okay? What's broken? What's going on? Where's the after video to show me everybody's okay? But
right.
Some people, so I think it's the same thing with spirits. They kind of get their jollies by making you run out of the house in your underwear and never come back.
Now, there are
it's
some
just,
people.
It just depends. Uh-huh.
I've got a question for you, and we're not going to name any names, okay?
Okay.
But, or at least I'm not going to name any names. But there are certain
okay,
people
then I
in
shall
this
either.
Community, people in this sort of paranormal community, in ghost hunting,
uh-huh.
In the UFO community, in the Bigfoot community,
yeah.
You know, in this general pot, who are rather unpleasant, narcissistic people who have genuine
sure.
Not they're not just
not just big egos. There's plenty of those. But there's people who are actually quite cruel. But they, they are magnets for phenomena. And they'll tell the rest of us, what, if you want to make contact, you want to see a spirit, et cetera, you've got to raise your vibration. And it's true. But then why is it that narcissistic, egomaniacal people are magnets for the phenomena?
Well, because what a lot of people want to see and what a lot of the television shows want to see is the scare factor, right? So the scare factor comes from the nasty stuff, the awful, scared having a conversation with E.T. holding a potted plant. They're going to get scared with, you know, the creature from Dark Skies or those horrible poor things the guy who wrote Communion has to deal with. So because of that, you know, what sells is scare. So these particular awful, narcissistic, dark people, they're attracting the darkest, most horrible, negative energy that's hitting people with the chairs and shoving people down the stairs and, you know, all of that stuff. That's why I think they're magnets. I mean, you know, technically anybody who is in tune should be a magnet, but it's what are you accepting? And, you know, when I go in a haunted location, I protect myself because I grew up in a house where that kind of stuff happened, and I don't want that stuff to happen to me. But even though I am also a magnet because of my psychic abilities, I'm always the one to get – I used to teach in Dallas before the quarantine, and every time we went to a haunted place, something would scratch me or punch me, or I was always the one. It became the running joke. But yeah, if you're going in looking for darkness, you're a magnet for darkness in the same way that a human being could walk into a bar and attract all the negative people in there. And, you know, that doesn't surprise me. What does surprise me is that there are folks in our community who are like that. Not surprised, like I'm actually surprised, but on an ethereal level. In the same way that when I started making the spiritual part of my life as important and as much of my time, if not more, than the artistic part of my life, I thought I was going to be welcomed with these wonderful, loving arms, and I learned that a lot of psychics are very mean people. I mean, there's some wonderful ones that I love, but there's a lot of jealousy, there's a lot of ego, and it's worse than the ego in artistic people in many instances. So sometimes clients will come to me in tears and say, how come this psychic told me this? Why is this psychic being so cruel to me? And I always say, just because somebody has a gift of prophecy, it doesn't mean they're a nice person. And just because somebody is a predictive psychic does not mean they're also an empath. And they might not feel things for you. I knew a psychic once who was an amazing predictive psychic, but man, this person wouldn't piss on you if you're on fire. So, you know, we have to remember
and
those people are doing this work.
Yeah, and
that's
what I can't get is – sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's what I don't
get. No, please.
Is how people can be basically so low vibe and still have these abilities.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
and
not everything comes from the light. You know, I know a lot of people say to me, oh, well, he'll get his when he dies. And I always say, well, but what if he died? Like, what if when Charles Manson died, let's give that as an example, instead of walking through the tunnel of light, he walked through the tunnel of dark. And at the end of that tunnel was Hitler holding a cupcake saying, good job. You know what I mean? I mean, I think the dark is just a different consciousness. And we spend a lot of time trying to make darkness be light. And I think we should probably be spending that time staying away from the darkness and focusing on boosting up things that are of the light instead of worrying about saving the dark. It's like how a person will ignore 50 of their friends and spend all their time fretting on the one friend that doesn't treat them well. Well, why is she so bad to me? Why is she a liar? Why isn't she being a good friend? It's like, well, obviously she needs to be let go. And as my best friend likes to say, namaste away. And you need to focus on these lovely friends that treat you well. But I think it's the same thing. We're fascinated with how can we find the goodness in the dark spirit? And maybe sometimes the answer is there just isn't any. And these negative people resonate with that spirit activity because, right, because when narcissists looked in the pond, he saw his reflection. So narcissists like to see the reflection of what's inside of them. It's a shame, right. But it is, you know, if you go in the ocean, there's going to be sharks. You can't do anything about it. You shouldn't stay out of the ocean because of it. But there's going to be those sharks, right? And I hate to say this, but you are wonderful, and we're completely out of time. Will you do this with me again? I would love it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to, Sheena. Thank you so much for having me.
Is there a place where people can find you online and learn about your projects and learn about what you do?
Twitter. I'm at the Karening on Twitter is my handle. And I've got two movies on Amazon right now. One is called Unacknowledged. Another is Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. And we've got the most recent one, The Cosmic Hoax, on YouTube for free.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you'll have to send me all those links because I want to watch everything. I'm completely fascinated with you now, having worked with you twice, and I want to watch everything you've got going on. Thank you for being here. Let's do this again soon. And if you missed any of the links for Michael, you can also find me at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I will pass those on to you for all of your spiritual needs, your psychic needs, want to know about what I do, my services, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, this show, HauntedPlayground.com, and, of course, the network, liveparanormal.com, and, of course, please check us out also at iHeartRadio.com. I'll be live tonight at 9 o'clock doing Haunted Playground After Dark. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration, stay spooky, keep telling people about the things you see beyond the three dimensions, and I'll see you here next time on Haunted Playground. I love you. I'll see you next week.